Welcome, this is the Sales IQ Podcast. My name is Luigi Prestonenzi, and I'm on a mission to help salespeople be the best sales professionals they can be. Each week, we'll bring you a different message from thought leaders from around the globe so we can help you master the art of selling. Welcome to another episode of the Sales IQ Podcast. I'm your host, Luigi Prestonenzi. This episode is all about sales enablement and how to get the most out of your sales efforts. With so many changes occurring when it comes to selling, different platforms, the requirement to give more information, many of us find it difficult to manage all that information required to assist a customer through the buying process. Our guest this week is Tamara Schenk, one of the leading experts when it comes to this topic. Tamara is currently the research director at global research firm CSO Insights, advisory board member at the Sales Enablement Society, and co-author of Sales Enablement. Please welcome Tamara to the show.
Thanks for having me, Luigi.
Oh, fantastic. So look, before we get into this, you know, really hot topic, please share with us a little bit about you and how you started in the world of sales and sales enablement.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do that. So yeah, I'm in my business career around 25 years around. I initially started with a company I had with a partner. So we developed and sold and implemented software for just-in-time suppliers for the automotive industry. So I learned to do all of this. And then I was an IT consultant for a couple of years, and I became a management consultant. I had business development role. So consultancy is always selling. Yeah. So you just can't, distinguish that, the selling from delivering.
Yep.
And then I started with T-Systems, a Deutsche Telekom company, in 2008.
Yep. Yeah.
That's right. And I had a couple of roles there, from strategy implementation to sales roles, again, business development roles. And then I was asked to co-lead a sales restructuring program. And as usually, you move a few people out and you tell the others that they have higher quota, better, fewer people. And then I started to think about, okay, but how do we actually help our sellers to be able to achieve these goals?
Yeah.
And then I found that we actually don't help them very well at this point. So, for instance, we had content they should use on 35 different places on a global level. The training landscape was not organized at all, and there was no consistency around it. And we were just about to implement the new sales process and CRM and all this stuff. So the thing is always, where do you start to make things better? And at this point, I had a senior executive sponsor who was running the portfolio, or you call it the product management part of the house, and he had to consolidate different views of what is it actually we're selling.
Yeah.
He had to consolidate that, and he had a need to communicate specifically that to the sales force. And I said, you actually, there's a bigger picture that is where I come from. And so, and he was happy that he had someone who could solve this problem.
Yeah.
So we started to consolidate the content landscape to implement a sales enabled content platform. And then you go into the content, you see actually the content is not customer focused, it's too product focused. Then you work on that, you develop some frameworks to get better with all of this. And then you come to the bigger picture, and actually, what is it we do when it comes to sales training for our sales folks? Then you have to orchestrate that piece to make it more customer centric and really orient that to the changing buyer behavior, things like that. And then you come to the coaching part, because then you miss, maybe we missed something to integrate and work with the sales managers to help them to become better coaches to really be able to move the needle. So long story short, this is what I did a couple of years.
Yep.
Until 2013. And in 2014, I changed my role and became an analyst, and I joined CSO Insights. We are the research division of Miller Heiman Group. We are an independent research division there. And I'm the lead analyst on all things sales enablement.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'm happy to combine the data, the research, the client work, and also with my own experience, of course.
Yeah. So you've had quite an interesting career going from,
you know, that just-in-time sort of lean model, becoming, you know, being that consultant, and then moving into, you know, a VP of sales enablement for quite a large, you know, global business. What attracted you to the Miller Hyman research division?
It was interesting because when I started to take care about sales enablement, it was 2008-09, and then we were in the implementation phase in 2010, and it was very new at this point, and also at this point it was very focused on, this is all about technology that helps to organize your content in a way salespeople need it. And it was, the term was promoted by those vendors at this time, and then as you work in this, you see, I need help, and I was looking for help in the industry. And so I found Scott Santucci, who was at this time leading the sales enablement practice within Forrester. So I was used to work with analysts during my career around sales enablement. And I always found this very useful to combine the idea of having data and also having frameworks to be able to apply that to our context we had at this time at T-Systems, and to tailor that accordingly. So that work definitely helped me to be able to develop a more strategic business case, because I started this idea as a program, and with the help of all the work we've done at this point, I could develop this to a strategic function back in sales where it should be. At this point, I said, I've done all these different facets of sales enablement, of what could be a next career step. And so I thought, actually, I like this work. I could imagine to connect the dots and to look at it from a different perspective.
Oh, fantastic. So, I mean, because it's interesting, right? Because that you would have been quite an early adopter of that sales enablement movement,
yeah,
if it's 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. What were some of the challenges that you experienced when trying to adopt this new sales enablement methodology?
Oh yeah, so many actually. You run from one challenge into the next one, as usual when you start new things. But so the first one is, of course, there is a new term, and initially it creates fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, because others say, okay, what does that mean? And then some other functions might feel threatened. So at this point, we looked at it at this point from a content perspective, and it's, of course, so much more than that. So alone with that, you cannot move the needle. So you need to connect the dots, of course, across the content landscape, the training, the coaching, the tool, the technology landscape. And it's important to make sure, and that was the learning journey for me, that it's not about creating a new team that's vacuuming in everything else that could look like enablement. Because whatever's existing in an organization, if you don't have this function or discipline or initiative right now, everybody in the company wants to help sales. There is product marketing who is sharing decks. There is marketing. They do things for sales. If it's leads, it's content, it's social content, it's blogs, it's videos, and it's polished references, case studies, white papers, all these things. There's sales operations. They help with the process. They provide templates, legal. They provide contracts and other templates salespeople are asked to use, and all these things. And then sales training and L&D. They provide their stuff, and the problem is that all of this doesn't add up to make sense. It's usually presented in a way from the perspective of these functions. This is what we think sellers and buyers should need, but it's not addressing sellers' challenges usually, and as it's not consistent and not designed along the customer's path together, it's usually not consistent. Then it creates confusion in the sales force. And if you have your quota, if you are pressured, this is why it's so important to know sales, then you simply switch off the noise. Yeah. If it doesn't make sense to you, you use what you have on your laptop and go for it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem sales enablement has to solve. and this orchestrating element is really, really very important. And to have this common design point, and it has to be in the age of the customer. It has to be the customer, and specifically the entire customer's path or buyer's journey. It's just important to have this bigger picture in mind when doing this. Okay. And the orchestrating role, it's really something that's important, and I always want to hammer home, because otherwise you create fear in marketing, you create fear in product, you create wherever you are in your organization. Sales ops is asking, well, that's what we do. No, there is a difference. Sales ops is more about creating the foundation. They are more the architects of your selling system, as processes and procedures and systems and performance management and compensation and pipeline management and sales enablement, ideally built on that, to work with people, to engage sellers, to empower them, to enable them to be more successful.
Yeah. So just to confirm, so because there is a bit of a market or a lack of understanding in industry about what sales enablement, the definition is. And what I've heard you say is, it's essentially a way to orchestrate different areas of the business to pull in information that is customer-centric, that helps the buyer through the buying process. Have I sort of understood the definition correctly?
Yeah, you have the main idea, absolutely. So how we define it specifically is that sales enablement is a strategic collaborative initiative. Because it can come as an initiative, as a function. It is designed to increase predictable sales results by providing consistent, scalable enablement services for customer-facing professionals and their managers so that they can be valuable in every buyer interaction. It's not a five words definition, I know that, but we wanted to make sure that we define what it is, how it is done, why it is done, and for whom. And that it's also a definition that shows it's not the same than sales ops, because part of the problem, why are we discussing year over year what sales enablement is because there is the same gap of defining what sales operations actually is.
Yeah.
And this is why. This is part of the confusion, is that we don't have clarity on a sales upside. So if we want to create clarity on a sales enablement side, we have to solve the problems on both ends.
It's interesting you say that, because I often find even, clarity from induction, who owns induction? Is induction owned by the sales leader, or is induction owned by, human resources? There is a genuine lack of clarity around some of these, ancillary functions, which are so important.
Yeah, we are not in sales. It's really interesting because if you look at a finance department, if you talk to somebody about an EBIT or an EBITDA or what a cash flow is, you have a very specific definition, and nobody would disagree with that. That's a common standard, and we still have a long way to go to get to some kind of standard in the sales world.
Yeah, fantastic. So just on that, that's a really good definition and a way to describe that function of sales enablement. You've authored a report or you've helped sort of put together a report that sort of surmises a lot of this stuff. What were some of the big takeaways or some of the key highlights that, surprised you in that report?
Yeah, so all the reports we're doing are always big teamwork at CSO Insights, so everybody is contributing. The big surprises we found this year is that sales enablement is still growing, but it's not growing that fast as it was growing the years before. But we've also found that if we now have more than 60% of organizations who say, we have something we call sales enablement, that we have a much higher sales enablement rates, if you will, in organizations that are larger than 250 millions in annual revenue and in specific industries. So like high-tech, professional services, IT services, all these industries that experience a disruption of their business models early on. So they have more likely, they were more early adopters when it comes to sales enablement. So as I come from an IT services company earlier on, so we had this 2008, 9, 10, exactly these in these years. So the services went to the cloud and all of a sudden it was no longer of any value to talk about how fantastic your data center would look like. And at the same time, the buyer roles changed. So, you know, selling cost savings to a CIO was no longer differentiating and sufficient in any way because the buyer roles changed to the CFO was asking, how does that fit into my EBIT model? Very different challenges and very, very different approach you need to design, to tailor and to market and to sell your services.
Okay. Yeah, that's very interesting. And what are some of the challenges that you've seen organizations, you know, encounter when trying to drive this sales?
Yeah, until you ask about what we found in this study specifically. Yeah. So we found specifically that the priority of the sales enablement services have changed a bit.
Yep.
So we found that sales process improvements would always include it in the sales enablement top three services. It's now lower ranked. So it also shows that as sales enablement is more growing up, that sales operations takes again ownership of their own core responsibilities. So sales enablement, really sales training services are still the number one service. And that means all kinds of sales, of skills, methodologies, product, process, social selling, customer value, justification, customer journey, all these kind of things.
Yeah.
And content is becoming more important that organizations see more and more, oh, content is not just we have a nice technology, we can push everything on that platform. Is that helpful? No, it is not, because if you don't have organized your content in a way that engages sellers and helps to facilitate buyer interactions, you know, it doesn't create the value you are looking for.
Yep.
Then sales coaching is becoming more and more important and organizations are becoming more mature when it comes to sales coaching. And of course, technology plays a bigger role every year. We try to capture the whole idea of designing enablement services in a way that it's engaging seller, but more importantly, engaging buyers at the end of the day. We capture this in this year's study, another big theme of customer engagement. So what are the components to it and where is the industry?
Yeah. And are you finding that, you know, you mentioned earlier that some of the bigger organizations are the ones that have really adopted the sales enablement approach. What about the sort of, you know, the small, medium enterprises, the mid-market, 50 mil, uh-huh. 100 mil? Uh-huh. Have you seen any of those organizations adopt these practices?
Yeah. So the good news is those organizations are adapting sales enablement ideas, and it is usually much simpler for them because they don't have another 10 divisions, another 10 business units. They have to orchestrate things across. So, and imagine organizations in that size, they very often have already sales and marketing under one leadership in a more integrated way. So then it's easier to get to a shared vision of future success, what sales enablement should do.
Yeah.
The good news is it's very often simpler. Even if you should work with the frameworks and ideas, the implementation is simpler as you have less stakeholders to get on the same page. But definitely you don't have to work through a lot of different business units and so on and to get more executive stakeholders aligned. So that's actually the good news.
So less bureaucratic buying or less bureaucratic tape enables the sort of the smaller organizations to really drive that sales enablement function.
Yeah, okay. It's really the idea. Do I have a team that thinks backwards from the customer's path and is able to assess what is it actually we have in terms of content? Is the content in any way designed to serve the different phases of the customer's path? Or is actually, if you're honest, what we have more around our products?
Yeah.
You know, it's deep dive on our products.
Yeah.
Or is it really designed to engage buyers? That can be done in an assessment. The content management framework can be designed in a process to orchestrate across maybe the enablement team, the product, and the marketing team when it comes to content creation. So usually these are the core teams. That can be a starting point. Or if somebody says we have a bigger issue with our training and seller engagement and coaching product, you can also say, okay, what is it actually we are doing? It is consistent in any way. How do we make sure that our sales force is able to apply the skills we need to respond to the modern buyer, if that's value messaging, if that's social selling, if this is a strong sales methodology that's applied. You can also come from this perspective. It doesn't matter where you start. You should have this bigger vision in mind that at the end of the day, you have to integrate these enablement services to align all of them and to make sure that you move the needle. And with all of this, having said that, less is more.
Yeah, okay. So that's I really love the way you keep referring back to moving that needle, and having that positive sort of growth from a sales perspective. For organizations who haven't built a formal sales management function, share with us what they should do to commence this build of capability, and where should they start?
Yeah, so I hate to say that, but it depends. So it really, I would start with what we found is the most important thing is how you set up the idea of sales enablement in your organization. And if you rename an existing team and say, this is now what they are doing, not looking at the strategy, this is not a good idea. Actually, this is a recipe for failure.
Okay.
So you should take the time. If there is a sales leader that who says, yes, let's tackle this thing because we have a few challenges, then it's really important to understand what is the business, what is the sales strategy, how are we actually doing when it comes to executing the sales strategy. So I will find some strengths, some challenges, weaknesses, and gaps. So, and that actually describes the scope of sales enablement in that specific organization. And the strategy that should be developed from that analysis should always be connected to the sales leaders and the senior exec strategic initiatives. So what is important to them? What are the metrics they have to achieve? What are the KPIs they are measured on they have to achieve in this fiscal year, in the next 18 months, or whatever that time frame is?
Yeah.
And then you can come to a situation where you say, okay, we've actually done a lot. Our process stuff is fine. You know, the skills, we are fine with onboarding. Maybe we have that situation, but we're actually very product-centric. In our sellers actually talk way too much about product. So we are not really focused on the customer's path. So you could come up with a situation where you're saying, we have to define a new value messaging approach. We have to get this straight from marketing messaging to sales messaging. And we first have to develop that, and then we have to develop the skills, and then we have to reinforce it via coaching that our sales managers are actually able to coach along those lines. So that could be a scope in a specific organization. And in a second organization, it could be a different challenge. They maybe just have done that, so they have a different challenge.
Yeah.
This is why it really depends. In the analysis work, it's really important to look at the challenges when it comes to executing the strategy. What is it we really need to do?
So should one organization review the skills of their people first before embarking on the sales enablement project? Or
So a skill assessment can be a very important thing to do, assessing the content that's available, assessing the training landscape that's existing, and also looking at the sales process together with sales operations.
Yeah.
You know, is it used, is it not used, why? Yeah. So is something that has to be improved in that, because the process landscape is the backbone of it, because enablement services have a hard time to exist in a vacuum. Yeah, ideally, I should be able to connect them to a process that comes from the customer's path.
Yeah, because it's an interesting dilemma, right? Because some of the most mature sales organizations that have very defined sales frameworks and sales processes, some of their challenges is around process adherence, is getting salespeople to adhere to a process or continuing to build on their skills, because, a lot of salespeople There's only so much sales training you can throw at a salesperson at the end of the day. The concept of selling, I know that people would argue with me, but the concept of selling, yes, it's evolved, but the concepts are still the same. You know, some of the How to Friends and Influence People from Dale Carnegie, some of the concepts he talked about in 1936 are ever so relevant today. So how does an organization that, we've spoken about business that might not have had sales enablement, now we're talking about more mature organizations that have really been driving that function of, focus on development, process, framework. What happens when that sort of plateaus?
A few data points to back this up. So what we found across the study, and the study is global, more than 500 organizations worldwide. Yeah. So what we found is if organizations made the steps into the world of sales enablement, they have usually much better quota attainment and win rate results compared to the group that does not have anything called sales enablement.
Yeah.
So if you look, and that's first of all good news. You know, if this is 14% or 22% improvements compared to these two KPIs, it doesn't matter. So that's first of all good news. The devil is in the details. So if we then look more specifically at who actually achieved, you know, their senior executives' expectations, who met these expectations or exceeded them, then it's actually the case that only one third of organizations were able to do that. So they reported, yes, we met or exceeded the expectations. So that means we have two thirds that don't, that said, yeah, we met some expectations. And then we looked at the performance data again, and then we had to state that these two thirds are actually investing in something called sales enablement. They are not very successful, so they were just a bit better than average. And this is not why you invest in something. So the question is that was for us then, okay, what is the one third really doing differently? And it really starts with how we set it up. Yeah. Is it really, as I just shared, more set up in a more strategic way? Do we have a formal approach that's aligned to the strategy? Did we capture that in a charter that is really our guideline for the next 12 to 18 months, how we are running this in a consistent way? And it's a lot about senior executive buy-in and also about establishing a governance model that helps to keep the senior execs engaged and aligned. Because the problem with this is if you sound like sales training, you are treated like sales training.
Yeah.
But not as somebody who is running a function that helps me to achieve my goals of my strategic initiatives. You know what I mean? It is really important that also enablement leaders evolve in this path to find their voice as leaders that help to achieve the company's bigger goals.
Yeah. And how important is that?
This is really,
Okay. And thanks for sharing that. And how important is, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, executive buy-in, how important is, you know, the C-level executive buy-in in having an enablement strategy?
Yeah. It depends if it's always a C-level. It definitely depends on how your organization is structured. So if you're in a large organization and you do this for a business unit only, but this business unit is like a big company already, then it's probably not the C-level. It's your managing director or whatever.
Yeah.
So it should be, you know, the sales leadership team. It should be aligned with the marketing and or the CX leadership team. So however this is organized, but I would say a plus product ideally. So this is really important to have all them on the same page. And in organizations, what we found very interesting in high performing organizations that have quota attainment results, you know, bigger than 80% quota attainment, which is great because the industry average is around 53 or 54, wherever you look at. So in these organizations, we found it interesting that they actually report very often to a C-level function, and which is not the chief sales officer or the chief revenue officer, to the CEO or COO or something like that, or chief growth officer. So that was an interesting finding. So we will look at this in more detail in next year's study. Yeah, but really the setup is really important, and it's about to design what you do and how you do it.
Okay. And can you just clarify that again? You spoke about high performing mm-hmm. from a quota, mm-hmm. I think 80%.
Yeah.
Can you just clarify what you just said there? Because I want to make sure.
Yeah,
that's
so
really
so the industry average of the percentage of salespeople achieving quota was in the enablement study about 53.7%. In our sales performance study, it was about 54%. It was yep. last year 53%. So that's around the average what you see, not only in our research, but also in others.
Yes.
This is the average percentage of salespeople achieving quota, which is not a good number. It was 63-64% 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 8 years ago. So, and if you have an organization that says, yes, in our organization, 80% of salespeople achieve or overachieve their quota, then that's definitely a big difference.
Yeah, that's massive.
And this is the group we looked at, and we found that in this group, more of the sales enablement teams report to the C-level.
Okay. So they had a direct
yeah.
line. And
that
they,
means beyond the sales leader, even if that's a chief sales officer role. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting. It just goes to show that, yep. That's a huge difference.
It's in organizations that are also very focused on growth.
Yeah.
And the more important growth is for an organization, the more important sales enablement becomes, because that's what we've seen, this idea of scalability is becoming more and more important for enablement teams. So if you have a fast growing organization and your leadership team says, oh, we acquire a new company and we actually expect you to onboard them in the next 3 months to everything, then I have to have my sales enablement function set up in a way that I can scale what yeah. I provide.
Yeah.
And that means I have to make sure that I have processes in place. I have organized how we collaborate across teams. So this is formalized in one way or another, and I can actually be able to do that. And of course, then onboarding has a very specific relevance then,
okay.
even more.
That's fantastic. Look, one of the things that I found quite surprising, I mean, in the report was around the enablement services for salespeople, so there's primary services mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. sales training and coaching. Can you mm-hmm. expand on that for us, please?
Yeah, interestingly, for 4 or 5 years in a row, sales training is still the most important yep. Service for enablement teams, and it covers everything from skills to product to methodology to process to tools to value messaging, social selling, value yep. justification, all of this. Content became more important, and sales coaching became more important, and we see this year after year in the data that all of these services impact performance if they are done properly, if they meet expectations, and yep. they really engage sellers, and then also help to engage buyer interactions with buyers. But sales coaching provided ideally by the frontline sales managers is really the most effective service, because if you design it the right way, you create a system that makes sure that sales managers drive reinforcement and adoption of the enablement services you provided to your salespeople. So it's very important to have the sales managers on the same page all the time.
Yeah, no, I totally yeah. agree with that statement.
Because, if whatever transformation you want to run, I'm sorry, if it's not happening at the front line, it's not happening at all. Yeah, so that's very often overlooked, and it's more, oh, we do this from an enablement perspective and the sales managers are not even heard. So I always love to work with very ambitious sales managers.
Yeah,
and they are usually like A-player salespeople. They're always interested in something that can help them to be more successful.
Yeah.
They were simply listening to it, and you don't have a second chance all the time. But if that's something that interests them, and they say, "Oh, that's good for my team. That makes us more effective," they are on it.
Yeah,
they work with you. So it's yeah.
And so did you? And you might not have that data, but did the when you did your analysis and the high performing organizations that achieved 80%, were you able to see, whether they their leaders were good coaches? Did you get any insight into how they coach or the effectiveness of coaching?
So we didn't map that out for this specific group or organization, but that's actually an interesting blog post idea. So coaching in generally is getting more mature in organizations. So yeah. Just 3 years ago, we had 50% of the organization that said, oh, coaching in with us, it's we leave it up to the managers. Yeah. And that's the same thing as saying nothing will ever happen. So now we see that only around 1/3 of organizations are saying it's left up to managers, and their organizations are more moving in an informal and hopefully faster in an informal state, in a formal state of sales coaching. That means we have a coaching process aligned. Yeah. We have coaching guidelines. We have developed our managers to be effective coaches, and we have a cadence established to begin with this to get this up and running. And we also measure success. So that's what we call a formal or even a dynamic coaching approach. And the impact is on win rates. It's 16.6% win rate improvement in such a dynamic approach compared to the study's average. And it's around 10 or 11% improvement on the actual improvement on win rates in a formal coaching environment compared to the study's average. And that's huge. So if you ever have managed win rates in an organization, you usually know that 1 or 2 percentage points make or break the year.
Yeah.
And if you have an actual improvement in a 2-digit manner, so that really cannot be ignored or should not be ignored.
Because there's some pretty compelling statistics when you think about it, you know, having a formal coaching or a dynamic coaching process and how that's linking to, you know, to performance improvement. Maybe we have to jointly write a blog about that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. So really appreciate you sharing that. What if you're a sales professional? We have a lot of, you know, sales professionals that listen to this, you know, from a whole range of different companies. They might not have, you know, that formal coaching within their business or that sales enablement function for them to access. What are some of the things that they can do that, you know, will enable them to be more effective salesperson?
Okay, given a, you know, if I have a situation that nobody is supporting me as a salesperson, I would always think and work from the customer's in mind. So backwards from the customer's path. So, and this is what everyone can do on his or her own. So, and this is simply understanding that customers have different challenges and different goals in different phases of their customer's path. Yeah. So if early on a customer is focused on understanding the problem and the business impact of a problem, I'm not pitching a product. I simply don't, because it's not what they want. And they cannot even understand your wonderful product and services, because they are just about to understand the problem they have to solve. So what they need in this one is this business perspective approach. So how can I solve this problem? And by the way, dear buddy, do you actually understand the whole impact? The impact is a bit bigger. So the problem is bigger and the opportunity is getting bigger. So that's just very important. This is where the value messaging is so important, that I can talk to people respecting their role and factoring in their role and the challenges they are in, and as I can have this kind of conversation. And when they have committed to solve this problem, that they need to buy something, and there's maybe a formal RFP or whatever, or they make this commitment to buy something, then I, of course, have to share more about how this product specifically can solve this problem, or this solution can solve this problem, and also talk to different buyer roles that are involved.
Yeah.
But this is more the time to talk about specifics of the product. But this business level conversation in the beginning, they are so important, and then they're often not done, or then sellers think, okay, they do all of this on their own anyways. You know, I'm not doing this. So just because buyers do more on their own doesn't mean that we don't engage them early on. Actually, the earlier you engage them and the earlier a sales manager can coach a leader on opportunity, the more effective it will be, because you can help to shape that.
Yep. So for anyone,
so that's definitely something you can always help, and then also share this across your team and for the sales managers that are maybe listening to this. I would always focus on creating an atmosphere of sharing so that the A players in the team can share best practices, what worked for them, so that others can learn from it and that the whole team can leverage these learnings.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, you know, just to repeat, we're going to focus on the customer and the problem that you can solve with the customer.
Yeah.
And be really
exactly.
Customer-centric.
Because we did a buyer study also in 2018, can also be downloaded and see it, so insights.com.
Yeah.
The four preferences for buyers, what is it they want sales to do more consistently, more often? There is not a single one that's around product or service. They want salespeople to be prepared. They want that they are excellent at communication, and that means at all channels of communication. And they want to learn something new. They want to understand something better. They want to have someone who can help them, whatever they found online, to put that into their context, especially in a complex buying situation.
Yeah.
And they also want that sellers are not running away when a deal has been closed. That doesn't mean to become the better service professional, but to stay responsive during this time and to be with them.
Yeah, that's a fantastic insight.
Yeah, you see, these are four preferences, nothing about product. It's all about helping them to achieve the value they actually bought from you.
I often say that the solution that we offer is a byproduct of the conversation that we have with our prospect and
customer.
Absolutely. So really appreciate you sharing that with us. On another topic, so now that, you know, there's so much data that's coming through insights, it's everywhere, right? I had a really good debate with Richard Harris recently about this particular topic. But in your opinion, is sales a science or an art?
It is both.
Okay.
You know, if you asked this 30 or 40 years ago, everyone would have said it's an art. So we actually don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And nowadays, they say with all the technology, it's more a science. But if you look closely at your high performance and your average sales force, so it's what we often ask organizations in our best practices, world-class practices study, do you know why your top performers are top performers? And most organizations don't.
Yeah.
They know who they are, of course, but not why. So, and that's the piece of art that always comes into, you know, if you have A players in your organization. I mean, they are the people who prepare a meeting, who do everything, maybe last minute or 2 days before, whatever, but they are fully prepared and they have everything in mind how they will run that meeting, and they go into the meeting room and they feel the energy and sense what's going on, and they will change the whole agenda just in a second, and they will be successful with that. So on the one hand side, I drive out as crazy. On the other hand side, this is, you know, they leverage not only their intellect, but all their intuition. And if you want to call that art, then that's the element they bring into this.
Yeah, that's a great response.
I would more saying they leverage intellect and intuition. So data and intuition. And in our data and technology power time, we often overpower the intellect, you know, and try to make intuition not important. And I think that's not the right way to do it. So it would always... I mean, people who are really powerful, they leverage all these elements, intellect and intuition and instincts.
Yeah, fantastic. And so if you had the opportunity to go back in time and start your career again, what would you do differently?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because, I mean, it took a long time to get into research.
It took a long time. Yeah. But it's also maybe part of my soul's journey that it takes some time to find that field and also to connect the dots and to do all the things. I do at the moment, and also the energy I bring into this. I think things have to grow, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So honestly, I don't know. I will probably not have started an own business so early on because I was definitely too young to deal with all the personal challenges that come with it. So I would have probably done that later and gathered more experience early on. But, you know, it happened for whatever reason, and I know the reasons why, and I took all the learnings with it, and I think that's the most important thing.
That's fantastic. So having that exposure to, you know, running your own business and being a consultant and being in sales. Has that given you a really different lens when you're doing this research?
Yeah, absolutely. So it helps you in a research role. You actually have, I mean, you have to take the time because you have to understand the bigger patterns in the data and then to verify things with customers and to look at case studies and to look back at the industry, what are really the big patterns.
Yeah.
So, and this is very often what I experienced when I was a sales enablement leader. You don't have enough time to really understand what's currently going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because it's so pressured, it's so hectic, it's so fast. So, and I noticed from, many peers I have who are currently in this role to say, I know it's all good stuff, but I don't have the time.
Yeah.
I have to. And they were in such a tactical pressure and it doesn't make it always better, which is, I said earlier, so less is more.
Yeah.
It's not about running 5 programs for the sales force, it's maybe only doing 2 and throwing away a lot of old stuff that's no longer relevant.
Yeah.
But that takes courage and it also takes the time to really prepare that decision. To say, this is what we stop doing.
Yeah.
That takes time to come up with, with this program, if you want to call it like this, this is what we stop doing.
Yeah. Man, it gives you more focus, right? So,
focus and focus is important. If we want to move energy, so we have to focus on it.
Yeah.
And then we see a move. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, I've, thoroughly enjoyed this. I mean, this is a topic that I'm really interested in and I spend a lot of time researching. So I've thoroughly enjoyed this. Now, you've mentioned a few reports and what we'll do, we'll get that information from you and pop it in our show notes so our listeners can go and download. But where can they connect with you and engage with your content? Can you please share, where you spread the message?
Yeah, so who's interested on our content at CSO Insights, go to csoinsights.com. We have a blog. We publish usually Tuesdays and my blogs are usually published Thursdays.
Yeah.
We have on that page a menu that's called Research Studies. So whatever is open market can be downloaded there. And we also have current studies. We're always looking for participants to take our new studies. So currently we're researching world-class practices. So if you want to feel inclined to help us with that, it would be highly appreciated. So the link are also on the website. And of course, we welcome members who want to dig more deeper into the members' content. So there are a couple of different memberships available. Otherwise, connect with me via LinkedIn or follow me on Twitter.
Oh, fantastic. Well, look, we really appreciate you having, coming onto the show. And look, there's so many other topics that we'd love to have you back on again.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Luigi. It was a great pleasure. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much. What I loved about that episode with Tamara is that Tamara didn't start her career in sales. I love that Tamara began as a consultant and worked in non-sales roles before moving into the world of selling. This example again reinforces that sales is an art and can be learned and improved through training and development. My challenge to you for this week is, what is your focus when it comes to personal development? What skill will you focus on so that you can be the best sales professional you can be?